Konbanwa, Brendan.
What?
It's Japanese for good evening.
Oh, okay. I need to brush up on my Japanese. I'm
Not a
not
Thing
going to try and
podcast?
say something else because it'll come off as offensive. I don't know.
The Not a Thing
Hello.
podcast. 159. Hey, Brendan, how you do?
It do, Alan. It do.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we are back and recording, and everything's good. We had a slight kind of hiccup because of I actually am gonna blame Apple on this one because they released a new version of OS 10 and it broke not a lot of things, but it seems to only break the things that are like the base connectivity things that I care about. So it broke my ability to work from home. I've since fixed it, but initially it broke my VPN, and then we realized 5 minutes before the recording that it broke part of my sound recording chain, so we weren't able to jump on the microphones quite as early. But it's all running. We're able to podcast again. So hooray! We're gonna get into a couple topics. One of which is an update to a previous topic, sort of. We were talking in the past about the Volkswagens and the diesel and the defeat devices that were fitted on them to cheat around the emission standards, and that's still going. I have received no less than three physical mails from lawyers asking if they want to represent me in the upcoming suits for Volkswagen, which is kind of crazy, but I don't know. We're looking at that. But on a different note, something that I'm also actually somewhat connected to is an accusation that Samsung is cheating on their energy efficiency ratings. And supposedly they had a similar defeat device where if the TV noticed it was being tested, and I'm not sure exactly how it did that. I think there is some notes in the article about how it's using a motion sensor to detect if it's normal watching conditions or not, essentially. And I guess abnormal watching conditions for testing mean that people are walking around in front of the TV, whereas if people are watching TV, most people are pretty static while watching TV, and so it's able to change its energy output. I think A, that's kind of fascinating in the same way the Volkswagen one was sort of fascinating, and B, really jacked up. Again, not a thing. Cheating at energy ratings and stuff, not a thing. So, Samsung, shame on you. I own a Samsung TV. It's very likely that I'm also in violation of that. Who knows? I don't think they're going to recall the TVs, though. Something tells me that it's less of a big deal that that TV is cheating the energy ratings. But it also kind of speaks to a bigger problem. When we found a good article about this too, and the short form on this article is talking about a phrase that's kind of buzzwordy right now, the Internet of Things, and talking about how all things like TVs and refrigerators and cars are smart and are internet enabled, and so can do more than what they would 10 years ago, and the internet aspect connecting them all will result in the overall good for society. Well, we've talked about some of the downsides to this, notably the connectivity aspect in the I believe it was Jeep that had the Jeep that could be hacked. You could
Yes.
operate the brakes and the steering remotely, which is real bad,
If it
fantastically
was just a
dangerous.
stereo, it'd be okay.
Yeah. It sounded like initially it was like, oh yeah, you could change the radio, and no, you can put the car
Change air
in essentially
conditioning.
like lockdown mode, and it comes to a halt wherever it is. Yeah, that's not good. So there's that, and then the other aspect of it is that because everything is smart, you can also program them to do things that are questionably legal, like determine if they're being under testing and change their behavior to suit, to get around regulations and whatnot. And it turns into the Internet of Things that can lie. And the article that we found says that if you're, you know, one of the reasons that all of those testing measures exist is because people tend to lie. That's just kind of a thing. And that's a lot more understandable. And then having tests for things, for machines and for computers is supposed to be the way to keep the people honest, because you can tell the machines will always tell the truth. Well, now if the machines can lie too, it's bad. It's not awesome. It's not optimal, because you can't trust things. You have to be you have to have like this double extra sneaky level to get around things, to find the cheaters. And now that machines can cheat, it's even worse. I mean, it's not even AI at this point, right? It's just computers being smart enough to get around things. And imagine if they can get around things of their own volition. Right now they're getting around things because we're telling them to get around things. It's going to be real bad when they figure out that they can do it for themselves.
They can pretend not to be sentient.
Skynet, man, I'm telling you, not a thing. Hopefully not anyway. I'm amazed at how just kind of how bad the Volkswagen situation is, and it's the kind of thing where it's probably more widespread. It'll be really interesting to see how widespread it is and what Volkswagen will do about it, because I think they are not getting away with it, because it's just from the sheer magnitude of the issues. But at the same time, I think it's going to be hard to enforce something that would fix it, at least in a reasonable amount of time, right? I mean, if they have to recall and then modify, what is it, 11 million cars worldwide, that's going to be an amazing outlay for them, assuming they can pay for that. I'd like to think they can pay for it and then still be solvent enough to that I could maybe sell my car in some amount of time, but we'll see. I don't know. I may end up.
If it takes that company down, I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah. Well, it may take the brand down a peg. They'll probably have to shift Porsche into making the replacement Volkswagen and Audi cars. Which would be fine. I wouldn't mind a Porsche, actually. But
I don't see how it's shocking that a multinational corporation would do something underhanded to make more money at the expense of the planet. it surprised me we don't hear about this stuff more often.
Right, right. So, you know, I think as people are getting more savvy to the possibility of the things lying, the testing is going to get a lot more interesting and a lot more probing, and will probably expose a lot more of this kind of stuff. Hopefully it the pendulum swings back in the more honest direction, but we'll see. It may just prompt an arms race of detections and undetections, mostly because a lot of the companies are using the intellectual property, supposed intellectual property laws, like the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, the DMCA, and invoking that to say, hey, don't look at the source code of my car, don't look at the source code of my TV. And if you could look at the source code of the TV in the car, you could see where they were clearly cheating around things. So I think there's a lot of open source proponents that are saying that that yes, your intellectual property matters, but having the transparency of things for one, for regulation's sake, and two, for safety. I mean, it's 100% sucky that my car pollutes 40 times more than it should, but it's downright dangerous that there are cars that can be hacked into stopping on the roads. I mean, how soon is it before those things go the way of zero day kind of exploits and stuff? I mean, if you're familiar,
think of the children.
Yes, exactly. It's not awesome. So it's the kind of thing that hopefully will result in more kind of critical thinking about intellectual property and code integrity and transparency and accountability. Again, we cycle a lot of things back to accountability on the Not a Thing podcast. We're very accountable for our show. We know we don't do it exactly the right time every week, but we are trying to do it every week.
There is no right time. The right time is when it happens.
But that's as far as we're expected to go, right? The accountability of a car manufacturer in having their car not like stop in the middle of the road because someone hacked it, I would think should be higher. The accountability of a car manufacturer.
Our accountability is to continue the episode until it is actually completed. This would be a great point at which we would just pretend like the show ended.
Well, I think if we did that, the show might actually, I mean, I think it would eventually stop because I do have to, you know, upload it eventually, I guess. And put it on the internet, because if we just kept talking, it would never end. That would be crazy. Can you imagine that?
I don't want to imagine that.
Well, let's move into a world where imaginations are still running wild. There's an app that is being developed, and it's sort of not really imaginative. It's that joke that all startups are just reinterpretations of existing startups. So people say, "Oh, it's like Uber, but for cupcakes." This one is...
Wait, there's an Uber for cupcakes?
Actually, I think it is called Uber.
Oh.
At one point, I think Uber is in some places, they are offering food in addition to ride sharing. It's kind of crazy. But anyway, this one is about Yelp for people. And it's from a company that is releasing an app called People, spelled with two E's, P-E-E-P-L-E, which is sort of unfortunate because there is a company that already is making a thing called People, not an app, but a thing that is it's a peephole for doors that is, it's not a regular standard glass peephole. It's a camera, I believe. And then you can route the feed of that camera to an app or a computer, so you can look through your door, you know, from you know, wherever you are in the house or not even being in the house. But unfortunately, it's the same spelling as this app, and I say unfortunately because this app is getting horrible PR right now, because their whole thing is that you rate people on a 1 to 5 scale, and you can write like reviews of people, and it's like reviews are sort of like, they're not short. It's not like they were described in one article as like longer than a Twitter post, but shorter than like a blog, which I mean is essentially like an infinite space. I don't know how that actually works, but they're claiming that it's based around and their algorithms are based around trying to encourage positivity about folks, and not meant to be a way to slam people. Although it does, I mean, they are purporting to say, yes, you'll have, you know, unvarnished feedback if you use the site. The thing that one, it's a little creepy, honestly, like having, knowing, I think having it on the internet about what people think of you, or in writing about what people think of you, whether it's anonymous or not, I'm not sure anyone really wants to know that information.
Alan Meridian, 2 stars, would not recommend.
But the thing, yeah, so part of it is, I don't know, and I don't think they've really said, like, what are the controls for dealing with your own reputation, right? Like, how do you manage that? Because, I mean, that is just some person's opinion. And if every person's opinion matters the same, that's not really how the world works, right? You kind of care about certain people's opinions and less about others. And then you have to worry about the reputation of the reputation, you know, the reputation markers. And beyond that, I don't know how they control for things like bullying and harassment, right? You can just have tons of people make fake accounts and then downvote someone to oblivion, right?
Just keep telling them they're the AT&T of people.
It seems like a not good idea. I mean, it's possible that they're going to implement it in a way that that does away with all of these problems, but the more I read about it, the less it sounds like a company that has the sensitivity to kind of deal with it. Like the one thing that I'd read was that the people behind it, the people kind of creating the philosophy of it, are not coding it. The company that is coding it is actually an outsourced company to those people. So it's a little strange. Some people are even thinking that it's a hoax. I don't know. It's causing a lot of buzz at the very least, and that makes it a little kind of worthy to look at. I don't think it's something I want to see. I really just don't want your 2-star review on anything other than this podcast, Brendan, is what I'm trying to say.
Come on, Alan. I'd give you 5 stars. You know that.
Aw, thanks, man. I'd give you 5 stars, too.
I feel bad for that other people, the peephole company.
Yeah.
They're just getting trashed on Twitter by people thinking that they are the other company.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, there are only so many combinations of letters in the universe. And it's true. They don't work in the same systems. So you can argue that there's no, there's no concern over naming, but the problem is
a real thing. Yeah. I work for a company that has the same name as a fast food chain. So on our Twitter account, we get people calls to our call center, emails from people complaining about their bad dining experiences, forgotten condiments, cold food, warm milkshakes, the whole deal. It's a real struggle. Well, and not that the fast food chain does not have their own, they have their own social media. People just are dumb.
Yeah.
They don't understand how that works.
Right. I wonder how many calls about internet access they get.
Probably none. But I would say the ratio of people tweeting at us about their food, we probably get 6 of those tweets for every 1 actual tweet.
Wow.
That's actually supposed to be directed at us.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Yeah, so English, you know, maybe we should do different things with naming with English. I don't know.
Well, it's the same thing with streets. You go to every town, every town's got the same streets.
Right. Although I did just see a street. I was driving through Gilroy on the way back from Monterey just this week, and I saw a street and the sign, for whatever reason, was big enough that I could see from the freeway, and I wasn't driving, so I was just absentmindedly looking around, and the street name was No Name Uno.
What?
Yes. Yes. It's fantastic, right?
What?
I don't know. I don't know. It was like a full street sign. I have no idea. I'm going to have to look that up on a map and we'll link it in the show notes or something. But kind of from one theoretical social media thing to another theoretical social media thing, Facebook is looking to change up the like button. And there were some rumors that Facebook would implement a dislike button because they have a like button and have just kind of the positive and negative thing, which is kind of in line with Reddit, right? You have upvote and downvote. Currently, Facebook is just like, similarly to how Twitter just has star or favorite and Google Plus. If anyone uses that, still has like the plus one kind of thing. And so there's this tend towards like, if you only accentuate the positive, then you know, it's better kind of as a whole, because it will only be positive. Well, clearly that's not the case. I think Facebook and Twitter, you know, can show that you can have all sorts of negativity without having a thing that directly encourages negativity. But Facebook is rolling out a few different reactions to different things, and they're using little animated emoji to show the reaction. So like will still be like a little thumbs up, I think. And then they're going to have like, I've already forgotten the ones. It was like love.
Love, haha, yay, wow, sad, and angry.
Okay.
It's just like Inside Out.
Yeah, I need was it paranoia in there, because I feel like that's the majority of stuff I see on Facebook nowadays. It's people talking about all sorts
and
of.
And you can have Bing Bong, the imaginary friend.
Oh, Bing Bong.
Oh, Bing Bong. I would use the sad emoji.
Well, I think this is an interesting idea, although I don't like the animated emoji, only because I feel like I don't need any more emoji in my life. But
I think it might be a good move, because I mean, it is social media. It is now replacing a lot of actual human interaction that mm-hmm. people have. And it adds some more depth to that. If that's the direction we're heading, you know, I think it's going to be a better tool for better communication.
Yeah. Adding a little more nuance helps. I feel like,
When someone posts bad news, you don't want to hit like.
Right. Right. It is. That is super awkward about hitting like, but I want there to be something that it's not, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily have to be like a sympathetic reaction. I feel like the, because that's what those seem to be, right? Like if somebody posts bad news, sad isn't necessarily the most appropriate thing, I think, because sympathy tends to, sympathy is just like a thing that makes people feel, in my experience, just worse. It's not really something that's necessarily helpful. It's more just kind of it encourages the direction that people are feeling. And sometimes you want to cheer people up, and that's not like a way to react. And I don't, well, in that case.
Just use the ha-ha emoji.
I think that it's very situation dependent.
My bird died.
Yeah, right. I think that it is adding a little bit of nuance, and that probably will help. It's still not a replacement for saying words.
No, you should do both.
Yes. Yes. ideally you do words and don't ever say emoji out loud. Oh my god, I heard someone say lol a couple days ago.
Yeah, it's real bad.
Yeah, I'm...
That person should be slapped in the face.
Not a thing.
With something. Not your hand. Yes. Like, find something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Something distasteful. So they don't... It's like when a dog shits on the rug, some people would say that you should rub its face in it. I'm not saying you should do that at all.
You probably shouldn't, actually, because they don't make the association.
No, they don't. They're like, oh, cool, shit.
Yeah.
No, that needs to be harshly reprimanded.
Right. Not a thing. But the Facebook reactions thing, it's only in beta. So there's probably some folks that'll see it and some folks that won't. And then eventually
they're releasing it in Ireland and Spain. So we'll get the Irish and the Spanish to determine whether we get it in America.
What an interesting test group. I would love to hear the rationale behind why Ireland and Spain.
But drunk people love emojis?
I don't know. Maybe people that eat after, 10 p.m. really, really like being angry or sad and laughing at things rather than just saying like.
Yeah.
Could be. Well,
Or those are the smarter countries. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see how that goes, especially because those countries are in the EU, or at least Spain is. I don't think Ireland is, now that I think about it. I think that's part of the UK. So it's part of the EU, but they don't use the euro. That's the difference. But the EU, the European Union, released some news this week. An EU court specifically has ruled that the United States servers, U.S. like data center servers and everything else for websites and purchasing and stuff like that, are not. It's a little confusing the way it's described, but it's essentially saying people in the EU should not put their data in trust of United States servers, and this is. Kind of a weird thing. In the EU, they have different rules about data sovereignty and what you are able to know about yourself that companies keep. Like, you can essentially ask for all of the data that is in a company's possession in order for you to know what they know, and then also to make sure that it's the right thing. And there are some rules about retraction of data and stuff like that. Well, because of all of that, that kind of personal data integrity set is much more entrenched in Europe than it is in the US, where we know almost nothing about what companies know about us.
Just assume they know everything.
Right, pretty much. So the EU is basing this not because, companies are monitoring and keeping all of our data, but because the U.S. has a history of the intelligence agencies in the U.S. spying on its own citizens and inspecting that data kind of unlawfully or questionably lawfully. And so the EU is saying that there was a kind of safe harbor provision. So if like someone in the UK wanted to buy something in the US, then there would be some transfer of data and we would just all look the other way because, we're only using that data for that thing. Well, the EU is saying that they don't trust the US anymore because there have been too many instances of kind of domestic espionage, the US spying on itself. And so because of that, the EU data or EU citizens' data is at risk. And I don't know what this is going to turn into. It's just kind of a weird little thing. My guess is that it actually doesn't result in anything concrete yet. I mean, it's not like, companies are saying that they won't take European customers or anything like that, or if there are any lawsuits or anything coming up. But it does kind of... show some bad faith in the U.S. systems of kind of personal data and security and privacy and transparency about what data is collected and things like that. One of the interesting things in the article that it said was that the whole thing about big data is kind of silly, because you don't even have to be like a big company to quote, you know, to collect quote unquote big data. You just have to have a bunch of hard drives, which are super cheap now. I actually just bought a 2 terabyte drive for, I think it was $80. It's crazy. And it's just like, it was a laptop drive, because I replaced the one in my new PS4. I got a PS4. It's amazing. I've joined the the 2010s or whatever it is since the PS4 came out. So I replaced the drive in it. It's a 2 terabyte drive, and it's like the tiniest thing. It's ridiculous. So yeah, data storage is cheap, and collecting massive amounts of data is in most companies' best interests. And apparently, the EU does not believe that those companies do enough in the U.S. to protect that data from U.S. intelligence agencies, and I agree with them. It's kind of a big deal. So hopefully that will result in more oversight in the U.S., but probably not.
Well, I mean, at least it's an example of a government not or trying not to spy on their citizens.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least make it look that way. Or they don't want other people spying on their citizens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a thing. I think.
I don't think it's an American thing.
No,
I think that's a government thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's all sorts of weird provisions in the and I think it's France, where they have a provision in the law for intellectual property and stuff online, where if you want something removed, you have to put it in writing that you want it removed, but it'll be removed, like deleted from the internet. Like
we talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the ability to do that is
in episode, insert episode here.
Works every time. I think that was in France, and that's so strange and un-American. Which makes sense, because it's not in America. Yeah, like saying things on the internet is sort of forever still. That's sort of a thing. So so I'm not saying that the you know, European Union has their data privacy stuff all buttoned up or anything, but having companies and governments spy on citizens is not a thing. So let's see if the U.S. can agree with that, at least say they're agreeing with it.
Let's finish this show out with a couple things, Alan.
That sounds good. Well, actually, a way to kind of keep that communication and data private is a neat watch that you found. It's an Arduino-based watch that you can build, and some a cryptography buff traveled to... Oh, I've already forgotten the name of the place, but where they...
Bletchley Park,
where Alan Turing like went and figured out the... or using all the computing power that you know, they had to muster, and some of the brightest minds at the end of Second World War to figure out how to crack the Enigma code, the crazy Nazi code with the wheels that... they're essentially all linked, and then you have to put the wheels in a particular order, and then every time you key a number, it changes the positions of all the wheels and essentially changes the algorithm every time you key something. So even if you start in the same place, if you start typing different things, the message will always be different. It's really fantastic encryption kind of method, and all of the stuff about breaking that code is fantastic. I mean, every bit of media that I've ever come across for that. So the Imitation Game, the book Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson, you know, pretty much every wiki page that I've ever read about Enigma. It's fantastic. I love it. But so you found a watch that implements Enigma in an Arduino code, and it fits on your wrist.
Yeah, it serves no purpose other than it's cool. It doesn't tell the time. It just can encode things. And it looks cool. I would want one. But apparently you can make one if you want. The guy who made it released the plans for it so you can do it. But if you want to buy one, he wants you to pay him $10,000. Which half of which would go to charity.
Yeah, okay.
But still, you could probably make one.
Probably. I know that I'd seen a thing on, I think it was Etsy a while ago, of someone making the equivalent of an Enigma machine, but with wooden gears. So the Enigma is much more complicated than this, but it was essentially the same thing where you have wooden gears that are all notched in the same way. So whenever you, there's an input wheel and an output wheel. And when you turn first of all, you have to set all the wheels based on some prearranged code. And then as you encode using the input wheel, it spits it out on the output wheel. But every new letter kind of changes the positioning of all the wheels. So you don't get the same thing. Like if you hit L like five times, it would be different every time, that kind of thing. It's wild. It's
madness that humans came up with it.
Right, right. And so, but implementing it with like kind of wooden things and just turning it, I mean, it takes a kind of fairly complex kind of thing and simplifies it a little bit. It still doesn't make sense. It's not, it's encryption. It works real well. But, I'm a big fan of encryption. I think it's a thing. I like the idea of having an encryption method that you can actually see sort of how it works, or at least get the inklings of how it works. Public key cryptography with private keys and public keys is still a little daunting unless you want to get deep into math to figure out how prime numbers multiplied against each other form a secure basis for keys. That stuff is a little kind of messier and harder to understand, but at the same time, it's really in your best interest to figure out, at least to some degree, what it does. And it's really hopefully a thing that that companies will start implementing just in stuff. I mean, Google has said for a while that they're trying to go end-to-end encrypted for Gmail. I think Reddit has gone HTTPS everywhere, or at least you have the option to do that. There's all sorts of things that favoring encryption over non-encryption, even though it's not perfect. There's always some kind of links in the chain that are not encrypted, but at least it's a motion towards having, again, that personal data sovereignty and having that privacy that we can sometimes lack in the US anyway. But the Arduino watch that does the Enigma stuff, that's a thing. I like the do-it-yourself nature of it. I like the encryption stuff in it.
The first thing I thought when I saw that article was, Alan's gonna love this. It's all the buttons.
Yep. I don't have a, I don't think I have a bona fide Arduino. I have a couple things which are compatible with that, but I had one that I use to program some like LED light strips and make them flash in like different colors. This is a little more like traditional programming kind of a look. I would have to look at it. It would be it might be fun to build. Of course, I would have to build two of them, right, in order to send like messages.
Right.
Yeah. Is this your deal? You just want me to build this watch for you?
No. No, our podcast shouldn't have secret communicator watches, Alan. That would be absurd.
Okay, all right, that's a thing. I'll look into it. I'll look into this. This maybe this will be a side project. And I think finally a side project that that is pretty just freaking adorable is something that I think was done in China, if I'm reading.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was in China.
It's in China where some scientists have made micro pigs. So there's the concept of I think it's called teacup pigs, which are pigs that are bred to be smaller. Because pigs can be very, very big, you know, like hundreds of pounds, right?
Yeah, you need the bacon.
Right. But there's this kind of demand for pigs as pets, because pigs, when they're piglets, are really cute. They're, you know, they're tiny and I mean, they're baby animals. Baby animals pretty much universally are adorable. But having a pig as a pet is kind of difficult because they can grow up to be very big. So teacup pigs are ones that are bred to be small, but you're still looking at like I think it's 60 pounds when they're fully grown, which is you know still pretty substantial. So what these Chinese scientists put together, geneticists, they looked at it and figured out the genes that that cause the pig to grow up and then suppress them. So they only grow, I think it was like 13 kilograms, which ends up being like 35 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they're adorable.
it actually reminded me of Jurassic Park, the book.
Oh, yeah.
In the book, Hammond had the tiny elephant.
Yeah, yeah.
This is real. That book was written a while ago. It could happen.
I think the yeah, because that's essentially what they did. They suppressed the genes that cause it to grow up. I mean, it still develops like organs and everything else, and it goes through. I believe it still goes through, you know, the whatever stages of growth. So you do get, you know, puberty, even though it's this like miniature pig, but. And so you get a pig that essentially has no side effects from being tiny, and so it's potentially going to be a big kind of pet boom in China and elsewhere. I think they're already saying that it'll cost about $10,000 to make a tiny pig. But...
No, it's only 1,600.
Oh well, shoot,
it's 10,000 yen.
Oh. The exchange rate is in your favor. Okay, yeah. Excellent.
No, okay. It's totally affordable. And to be fair, they didn't just create these for pets. They actually use them for research because it's a smaller animal, they're able to do better testing somehow.
Well, it's
probably just an excuse to make cute pigs.
It's just
but smaller animals, I guess, are easier to study.
Yeah, it's less effort to an upkeep for a smaller animal. And you're right, adorable.
I really want a pet pig. I love bacon. It's conflicting. I love pigs, and they're delicious.
The one thing I did read about it is that while it comes out a smaller pig, kind of, it still has the instincts of a larger pig. So things like burrowing and other kind of behavioral things are not trained out of it or domesticated out of it. So that is going to be a longer process. I don't think that's
I can have a backyard pig. It doesn't need to be an indoor pig. It just needs to be tiny and adorable.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely link the show notes on that one. They are pretty great. It definitely made my day to find that one. I have to thank my geneticist sister for finding that one, genetic biologist. I don't know exactly what your title is, Susan, but thanks for finding that one and linking it, because it's great.
Our podcast needs a mascot. It's a podcast pig.
Podcast pig wearing an Enigma Arduino watch.
# podcast pig. We have a new one.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I will look into some watches and...
I will look into some pig. Wait, that sounds wrong. I scratched the... Delete from moment to minute that one.
Excellent, Brandon. I will talk to you later.
Till next time, Alan.